32. Fallonville. How well you say you know this guy, she asked. Rydell's SWAT shoe crunched on little squares of safety glass every time he used the brake. If he'd had time and a broom, he'd have swept it all out. As it was, he'd had to bash out what was left of the windshield with a piece of rusty rebar he found beside the road. Otherwise, highway patrol would have seen the holes and hauled them over. Anyway, he had those insoles. I worked with him in L.A., he said, braking to steer around shreds of truck trailer tires that lay on the two-lane blacktop like the molted skin of monsters. I was just wondering if he'll turn out like Mrs. Elliott did. Said you knew her, too. Didn't know her, Rydell said. I met her on the plane. If Sublet's some kind of plant, then the whole world's a plot. He shrugged. Then I could start worrying about you, say. As opposed, say, to worrying about whether or not Lovelace or Mrs. Elliott had bothered to plant a locator bug in this motorhome, or whether the Death Star was watching for them right now, and could it pick them up out here? They said the Death Star could read the headlines on a newspaper, or what brand and size of shoes you wore from a decent footprint. Then this wooden cross seemed to pop up in the headlights, about 12 feet high, with "Tune In" across the horizontal, and "To His Immortal Downlink" coming down the upright, and this dusty old portable TV nailed up where Jesus' head ought to have been. Somebody'd taken a .22 to the screen, it looked like. Must be getting closer, Rydell said. Chevette Washington sort of grunted. Then she drank some of the water they'd gotten at the Shell station and offered the bottle to him. When he'd crashed out of that mall, he'd felt like they were sure to be right by a major highway. From the outside, the mall was just this low tumble of tan bricks, windows boarded up with sheets of that really ugly hot-pressed recycle they ran off from chopped scrap, the color of day-old vomit. He'd gone screeching around this big empty parking lot, just a few dead clunkers and old mattresses to get in the way, until he'd found a way out through the chain link. But there wasn't any highway there, just some deserted four-lane feeder, and it looked like Lovelace had put a bullet into the navigation hardware, because the map was locked on downtown Santa Ana, and just sat there, sort of flickering. Where he was had the feel of one of those fallen-in edge cities, the kind of place that went down when the euro money imploded. Chevette Washington was curled up by the fridge, with her eyes closed, and she wouldn't answer him. He was scared Lovelace had put one through her, too, but he knew he couldn't afford to stop until he'd put at least a little distance between them and the mall, and he couldn't see any blood on her or anything. Finally, he'd come to this Shell station. You could tell it had been Shell because of the shape of the metal things up on the poles that had supported the signs. The men's room door was ripped off the hinges. The women's chained and padlocked. Somebody had taken an automatic weapon to the pop machine, it looked like. He swung the RV around to the back and saw this real old Airstream trailer there, the same kind a neighbor of his father's had lived in down in Tampa. There was a man there, kneeling beside a hibachi, doing something with a pot, and these two black Labradors watching him. Rydell parked, checked to see Chevette Washington was breathing, and got down out of the cab. He walked over to the man beside the hibachi, who'd gotten up now and was wiping the palms of his hands on the thighs of his red coveralls. He had on an old khaki fishing cap with about a 9-inch bill sticking straight out. The threads on the embroidered shell patch on his coveralls had sort of frayed and fuzzed out. "You just lost?" the man said. "Or is there some kind of problem?" Rydell figured him to be at least 70. "No, sir, no problem, but I'm definitely lost." Rydell looked at the black labs. They looked right back. "Those dogs of yours there, they don't look too happy to see me." "Don't see a lot of strangers," the man said. "No, sir," Rydell said. "I don't imagine they do." "Got a couple of cats, too. Right now I'm feeding them all on dry kibble. The cats get a bird sometimes, maybe mice. Say you're lost?" "Yes, sir, I am. I couldn't even tell you what state we're in right now." The man spat on the ground. "Welcome to the goddamn club, son. I was your age, it was all of this California, just like God meant it to be. Now it's Southern, so they tell me. But you know what it really is?" "No, sir, what?" "A lot of that same happy horse shit, like that woman camping in the goddamn White House." He took the fishing cap off, exposing a couple of silver-white cancer scars, wiped his brow with a grease-stained handkerchief, then pulled the cap back on. "Say you're lost, are you?" "Yes, sir, my map's broken." "Know how to read a paper one?" "Yes, sir, I do." "What the hell'd she do to her head?" looking past Rydell. Rydell turned and saw Chevette Washington leaning over the driver's bucket, looking out at them. "How she cuts her hair," Rydell said. "I'll be damned," the man said. "Might be sort of good-looking otherwise." "Yes, sir," Rydell said. "See that box of cream of wheat there? Think you can stir me up a cup of that into this water when it boils?" "Yes, sir." "Well, I'll go find you a map to look at. Skeeter and Whitey here, they'll just keep you company." "Yes, sir." Paradise, Southern California. A Christian community. 3 miles. No camping. Concrete pads. Full hookups. Electrified security perimeter. Free swimming. Licensed Christian daycare. State of Southern California. 327 channels on downlink. And a taller cross rising beyond that. This one welded from rusty railroad track. A sort of framework stuck full of old televisions, their dead screens all looking out toward the road there. Chevette Washington was asleep now, so she missed that. Rydell thought about how he'd used Codes' phone to get through to Sublette's number in L.A. and gotten this funny ring, which had nearly made him hang up right then. But it had turned out to be call forwarding, because Sublette had this leave to go and stay with his mother, who was feeling kind of sick. "You mean you're in Texas?"
"Paradise, Barry. Mom's sick 'cause she and a bunch of others got moved up here to SoCal."
"Paradise?" Sublette had explained where it was while Rydell looked at the shell man's map. "Hey," Rydell had said when he had a general idea where it was, "how about I drive over and see you?
Thought you had you a job up in San Francisco."
"Well, I'll tell you about that when I get there."
"You know, they're saying I'm an apostate here."
Sublette hadn't sounded happy about that.
"A what?"
"An apostate.
'Cause I showed my mom this Cronenberg film, Barry, this Videodrome, and they said it was from the devil."
"I thought all those movies were supposed to have God in them."
"There's movies that are clearly of the devil, Barry. Or anyway, that's what Reverend Fallon says. Says all the Cronenbergs are."
"He in paradise, too?"
"Lord, no," Sublette had said. "He's in these tunnels out on the Channel Islands between England and France. Can't leave there, either, because he needs the shelter."
"From what?"
"Taxes. You know who dug those same tunnels, Barry?"
"Who?"
"Hitler did, with slave labor."
"I didn't know that," Rydell had said, imagining this scary little guy with a black mustache standing up on a rock and cracking a big whip. Now here came another sign. This one not nearly as professional as the first one. Just black spray paint letters on a couple of boards. "Are you ready for eternity? He lives. Will you? Watch television."
Watch television? She was awake now.
"Well," Rydell said, "Fallonites believe God's sort of just there. On television, I mean."
"God's on television?"
"Yeah, kind of like in the background or something. Sublette's mother, she's in the church herself, but Sublette's kind of lapsed."
"So they watch TV and pray, or what?"
"Well, I think it's more like kind of a meditation, you know? What they mostly watch is all these old movies, and they figure if they watch enough of them, long enough, the spirit will sort of enter into them." "We had revealed Aryan Nazarenes up in Oregon," she said. "First Church of Jesus, survivalist. As soon shoot you as look at you."
"Bad news," Rydell agreed, the RV cresting a little ridge there. "Those kind of Christians."
Then he saw paradise, down there, all lit up with these lights on poles. The security perimeter they advertised was just coils of razor wire circling maybe an acre and a half. Rydell doubted if it actually was electrified, but he could see screamers hanging on it every 10 feet or so it would be pretty effective anyway. There was a sort of blockhouse and gate set up where the road ran in, but all it seemed to be protecting were about a dozen campers, trailers, and semi-rigs
parked on cement beds around what looked like an old-fashioned radio tower they'd topped with a whole cluster of satellite dishes, those little expensive ones that looked sort of like giant gray plastic marshmallows. Somebody had dammed a creek to make a sort of pond for swimming, but the creek itself looked like the kind of industrial runoff you wouldn't even find bugs around, let alone birds. Sure had the whole place lit up, though. He could hear the drumming of big generators as they drove down the incline. "Jesus," Chevette Washington said. Rydell pulled up by the blockhouse and powered his window down, glad it still worked. A man in a blaze orange fleece jacket and a matching cap came out, carrying some kind of shotgun with a skeletal metal stock. "Private property," he said, looking at where the windshield should have been. "What happened to your windshield there, mister?" "Deer," Chevette Washington said. "Here to visit our friends, the Sublettes?" Rydell said, hoping he could distract the guard before he noticed the bullet holes or anything. "Expecting us if you want to go call 'em." "Can't say you much look like Christians." Chevette Washington sort of leaned across Rydell and gave the guard this stare. "I don't know about you, brother, but we're Aryan Nazarene out of Eugene. We wouldn't want to even come in there. Say you got any mud people, any kind of race mixing. Race traders all over these days." The guard looked at her. "You Nazarene, how come you ain't skins?" She touched the front of her crazy haircut, the short, spiky part. "Next thing you're gonna tell me, Jesus was a Jew. Don't know what this means?" He looked more than maybe just a little worried now. "Got us some sanctified nails in the back here. Maybe that gives you some idea." Rydell saw the guard hesitate, swallow. "Hey, good buddy," Rydell said. "You gonna call up old Sublett for us or what?" The man went back into the blockhouse. "What's that about nails?" Rydell asked. "Something Skinner told me about once," she said. "Scared me." Dora, Sublett's mother, drank Coke and Mexican vodka. Rydell had seen people drink that before, but never at room temperature. And the Coke was flat because she bought it and the vodka in these big plastic supermarket bottles, and they looked as though they'd already lasted her a while. Rydell decided he didn't feel like drinking anyway. The living room of Dora's trailer had a matching couch and reclining lounger. Dora lay back in the lounger with her feet up for her circulation, she said. Rydell and Chevette Washington sat side by side on the couch, which was more a love seat, and Sublett sat on the floor, his knees drawn up almost under his chin. There was a lot of stuff on the walls and on little ornamental shelves, but it was all very clean. Rydell figured that was because of Sublett's allergies. There sure was a lot of it, though. Plaques and pictures and figurines, and things Rydell figured had to be those prayer hankies. There was a flat type of hologram of Reverend Fallon, looking as much like a possum as ever, but a possum that had gotten a tan and maybe had plastic surgery. There was a life-size head of J.D. Shapley that Rydell didn't like because the eyes seemed to follow you. Most of the good stuff was sort of grouped around the television, which was big and shiny, but the old kind from before they started to get real big and flat. It was on now, showing this black-and-white movie, but the sound was off. "You're sure you won't have a drink, Mr. Rydell?" "No, ma'am, thank you," Rydell said. "Joel doesn't drink. He has allergies, you know." "Yes, ma'am." Rydell hadn't ever known Sublett's first name before. Sublett was wearing brand-new white denim jeans, a white T-shirt, white cotton socks, and disposable white paper hospital slippers. "He was always a sensitive boy, Mr. Rydell. I remember one time he sucked on the handle of this other boy's big wheel. Well, his mouth liked to turn inside out." "Mama," Sublett said, "you know the doctor said you ought to get more sleep than you've been getting." Mrs. Sublett sighed. "Yes, well, Joel, I know you young people want a chance to talk." She peered at Chevette Washington. "That's a shame about your hair, honey. You're just as pretty as can be, though, and you know it'll just grow in so nice. I tried to light the broiler on this gas range we had down in Galveston. That was when Joel was just a baby. He was so sensitive, and that stove about blew up. I just had this perm, dear, and, well, Chevette Washington didn't say anything. "Mama," Sublet said, "now you know you've had your nice drink." Rydell watched Sublet lead the old woman off to bed. "Jesus Christ," Chevette Washington said. "What's wrong with his eyes?" "Just light sensitive," Rydell said. "It's spooky is what it is." "He wouldn't hurt a fly," Rydell said. Sublet came back, looked at the picture on the TV, then sighed and shut it off. "You know I'm not supposed to leave the trailer, Barry."
"How's that?"
"It's a condition of my apostasy. They say I might corrupt the congregation by contact." He perched on the edge of the recliner so he wouldn't have to actually recline in it.
"I thought you'd blown Fallon off when you came out to L.A.
Sublet looked embarrassed. "Well, she's been sick, Barry. So when I came here, I told him I was here to reconsider, meditate on the box and all." He wrung his long, pale hands. "Then they caught me watching Videodrome. You ever see, Deborah Harry, Rydell?"
Sublet sighed and sort of quivered. "How'd they catch you?"
"They've got it set up so they can monitor what you're watching."
"How come they're out here anyway?"
Sublet ran his fingers back through his dry, straw-colored hair. "Hard to say, but I'd figure it's got something to do with Reverend Fallon's tax problems. Most of what he does lately, it's about that. Didn't your job in San Francisco work out, Barry?"
"No," Rydell said, "it didn't."
"You want to tell me about it?"
Rydell said he did.
"I think he shot through something to do with the damned heater, too," Rydell said. They were back in the RV, outside the perimeter.
"I like your friend," she said.
"I do, too." "No, I mean he really cares about what's going to happen to you. He really does."
"You take the bed," he said. "I'll sleep up front."
"There's no windshield. You'll freeze."
"I'll be okay."
"Sleep back here. We did before. It's okay." He woke in the dark and listened to the sound of her breathing, to the creak of stiff old leather from the jacket spread over her shoulder. Sublet had listened to his story, nodding sometimes, asking a question here and there, his mirrored contacts reflecting tiny convex images of them sitting there on that love seat. In the end, he just whistled softly and said, "Barry, it sounds to me like you're really in trouble now.
Bad trouble."
"Really in trouble now." Rydell slid his hand down, brushing one of hers by accident as he did it, and touched the bulge of his wallet in his back pocket. What money he had was in there, but Wellington Ma's card was in there too, or what was left of it. The last time he'd looked, it had broken into three pieces.
"Big trouble," he said to the dark,
and Chevette Washington lifted the edge of her jacket and sort of snuggled in closer, her breathing never changing, so he knew she was still asleep. He lay there thinking, and after a while he started to get this idea, about the craziest idea he'd ever had. "That boyfriend of yours," he said to her in the tiny kitchen of Sublet's mother's trailer, "that Lowell, what about him? Got a number we could reach him at?" She poured milk on her cornflakes. It was the kind you mixed up from powder, had that thin, chalky look. The only kind Sublet's mother had. Sublet was allergic to milk. "Why?"
"I think maybe I want to talk to him about something."
"About what?"
"Something I think maybe he could help me with."
"Lowell? Lowell's not going to help you. Lowell doesn't give a rat's ass for anybody."
"Well," Rydell said, "why don't you just let me talk to him?
If you tell him where we are, or he has it traced back through the cell net, he'll turn us in. Or he would if he knew anybody was after us."
"Why?"
"He's just like that." But then she gave Rydell the phone and the number.
"Hey, Lowell?
Who the fuck is this?
How you doing?
Who gave you?
Don't hang up.
Listen, mother SFPD homicide." He could hear Lowell draw on a cigarette.
"What did you say?"
Lowell said.
"Orlovsky, SFPD homicide. Lowell, that big fucker with the great big fucking gun, came in the bar there. You remember, just before the lights went out? I was over there by the bar talking with Eddie the Shit."
Lowell took another drag, shallower by the sound of it. "Look, I don't know what you don't have to. You can just hang up right now, Lowell. But if you do, boy, you just better kiss your ass goodbye, because you saw Orlovsky come in there for the girl, Lowell, didn't you? You saw him. He didn't want you to. He wasn't in there on any SFPD business, Lowell. He was there on his own stick. And that's one serious bad officer, Lowell. Serious as cancer. Silence. I don't know what you're talking about. Then you just listen, Lowell. Listen up. You don't listen, I'll tell Orlovsky you saw him. I'll give him this number. I'll give him your description, and that skinhead's too. Tell him you've been talking about him. And you know what he'll do, Lowell. He'll come out there and shoot your ass dead. That's what he'll do. And nobody to stop him. Homicide, Lowell. Then he can investigate it himself. He wants to. Man's heavy, Lowell, I gotta tell you. Lowell coughed a couple of times. Cleared his throat. This is a joke, right? I don't hear you laughing. Okay, Lowell said. Say it's for real. Then what? What are you after? I hear you know people can get things done. With computers and things. He could hear Lowell lighting a fresh cigarette. Well, Lowell said, sort of. Republic of Desire, Rydell said. I need you to get them to do me a favor. No names, Lowell said fast. They're scans set to pick things out of traffic. Them. Them, okay? Need you to get them to do something for me. It'll cost you, Lowell said, and it won't be cheap. No, Rydell said. It'll cost you. He pressed the button that broke the connection. Give old Lowell a little time to think about it. Maybe look Orlovsky up on the civil list. See he was there and he was homicide. He flipped the little phone shut and went back into the trailer. Sublet's mother kept the air conditioning up about 2 clicks too high. Sublet was sitting on the love seat. His white clothes made him look sort of like a painter, a plasterer or something, except he was too clean. You know, Barry, I'm thinking maybe I better get back to Los Angeles. What about your mother? Well, Mrs. Baker's here now from Galveston. They've been neighbors for years. Mrs. Baker can watch out for her. That apostate crap getting to you? Sure is, Sublet said, turning to look at the hologram of Fallon. I still believe in the Lord, Barry, and I know I've seen his face in the media, just like Reverend Fallon teaches. I have. But the rest of it, I swear, it might as well be just a flat-out hustle. Sublet almost looked like he might be about to cry. The silver eyes swung around, met Rydell's. And I've been thinking about Intensicure, Barry. What you told me last night, I don't see how I can go back there and work, knowing the kinds of things they'll condone. I thought I was at least helping to protect people from a few of the evils in this world, Barry, but now I know I'd just be working for a company with no morals at all. Rydell walked over and had a closer look at the prayer hankies. He wondered which one of them was supposed to keep the AIDS off. No, he said finally, you go back to work. You are protecting people. That part's real. You got to make a living, Sublet. What about you? Well, what about me? They'll just find you and kill you, Barry. You and her. You too, probably, if they knew what I'd told you. I shouldn't ought have done that, Sublet. That's one reason Chevette and I have to get out of here, so there won't be any hassle for you and your mom. Well, Sublet said, I'm not working for them anymore, Barry, but I'm leaving here, too. I just have to. Rydell looked at Sublet, seeing him, somehow, in his full Intensicure outfit, Glock and all, and suddenly that big, crazy idea thing sort of up and shook itself and rolled over, revealing all these new angles. But you can't get him involved, Rydell told himself. It just wouldn't be fair. Sublet, Rydell heard himself saying about a minute later, I bet I got a career option here you haven't ever even considered. What's that? Sublet said. Getting in trouble, Rydell said.